Scientists tell us that the giant tsunami wave that devastated Southeast Asia in 2004 wasn't as big as we usually imagine. It's not that they got hit by a 20-foot-tall wave, as depicted here in the 2012 movie The Impossible. It's that they got crushed by a 20-foot wall of water that was miles and miles deep. And the human suffering that it brought is unimaginable. Hundreds of thousands died. Millions of lives were destroyed. And the devastation will go on for generations. But maybe not.
You'll remember that a number of years ago, there was a natural disaster in Southeast Asia. There was a typhoon, a monsoon, that killed about 100,000 people. I've asked about that event in the research I've done for Your Soul's Plan and Your Soul's Gift. And what I was told in the channeling sessions is that those 100,000 or so souls, before they were born, they looked at the Earth and they said, basically, we would like the Earth as a planet, as a whole, to be at a certain frequency or vibration by a certain point in linear time. And if it looks as though the Earth is not going to get there, we agree to give our lives in a large-scale natural disaster because we know that the result of that disaster will be a worldwide outpouring of love and support and aid and compassion. It will elevate the frequency of the entire planet.
I think for a lot of people, including myself, that's just an unsatisfying answer. Let me be clear. I don't mean to be dismissive or condescending of today's guest, Robert Schwartz. I believe he's a true spiritual seeker and someone who dedicates his life to helping people. And I don't know if he's right or wrong about the soul's plan, raise the consciousness of the planet thing. I don't know. But I want to know. At least I want to investigate the best that I can. I want to have this level 3 discussion beyond the complete denial that consciousness exists and beyond the Pollyanna, good-natured but misguided acceptance of every opinion on the matter. I want to get to level 3. Intelligent, earnest truth seekers like Rob, who are trying to figure out what all this means. Stick around. My interview with Robert Schwartz about what goes on between lives is coming up next on Skeptico. Today we welcome Robert Schwartz to Skeptico. Rob is a trained hypnotherapist who helps guide people through past life regressions. He's also the author of 2 very popular books, Your Soul's Plan, Discovering the Real Meaning of the Life You Planned, and Your Soul's Gift. Rob, welcome to Skeptico. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Alex. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
So, Rob, most of this audience that you're talking to right now, the Skeptico audience, is going to be familiar with spirit communication, even familiar with past life regression. But you have a rather interesting story. Tell us a little bit about how you got started and what you do right now primarily in your work.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Let me begin by saying that my website is yoursoulsplan.com. And if people go to the books pages of that website, they can read large portions of Your Soul's Plan and Your Soul's Gift for free. My path to writing these 2 books, and the premise of the books, is that we plan our lives, including our biggest challenges before we're born, is that I started off in the corporate sector. I have an MBA, which I think is probably atypical for the author of a couple of New Age books. And I was in the corporate sector for a number of years, self-employed as a marketing and communications consultant, basically doing different forms of corporate writing. And back in 2003, after I had been doing that work for a number of years, I had what you could call an existential crisis about my life. I felt deeply unfulfilled by the corporate work that I was doing. And at the same time, I had this distinct feeling or sense that there was something else, something quite specific that I was supposed to be doing here, but I didn't know what it was, and I wasn't even sure how to figure out what it was. And so my first attempts to resolve this existential crisis were very conventional in nature. I started off by going for career counseling, took that Myers-Briggs inventory, found out I'm an INFJ personality type, and although that was interesting, it really did not help me in any way. And then I went to a lot of my friends and family, and I said, you know, I'm really unhappy doing this corporate work. I feel like there's something else I should be doing. What do you think I should do with my life? That, by the way, is not a good question to ever ask another person. About half the people I asked literally shrugged their shoulders and said, I don't know. And the other half advised me to do whatever they were doing for a living, which, as you can imagine, was not tremendously helpful. So I started to think, all right, I've got to think outside the box here. What can I do to figure out what I should do with my life? And this idea came to me, go see a psychic medium. Now, I come from a very conventional background. Mediumship is not part of that background. And I wasn't even sure that I believed in mediumship, but I thought, why not? You know, I'll invest an hour of my time and some money, and if nothing comes from it, there's no harm done. So I did this. I had my first session ever with a psychic medium on May 7th of 2003. And the reason I remember the date is that this was the day on which my life changed. The medium introduced me to the concept of spirit guides, which I had never even heard of at that time. And she explained that a spirit guide is a highly evolved non-physical being with whom we plan our lives before we're born and who then guides us through our lives after we come into body. And through this particular medium, I was actually able to talk at length with my guides that day. They said a lot of amazing things to me in that session, one of which was they said, you planned your life, including your biggest challenges, before you were born. And I will tell you, Alex, I just shook my head and I said, well, why in the world did I do that? And they said, you did this for purposes of spiritual growth. So I probably would have dismissed all of this as some kind of delusion on my part, except that the guides knew everything about me without me telling them anything. They knew what all of my challenges had been. They were able to give me detailed explanations as to why I had wanted before I was born to have those very difficult experiences. And again, this was all without me telling them anything about myself. So this rocked my world, so to speak. And in the days and weeks after that session with the medium, I thought about this perspective constantly. And the effect that it had on me was that it created a deep healing, because it allowed me for the first time in my life to see a deeper meaning and a deeper purpose to the challenging things that had happened. So I realized I was onto a concept that could bring a similar kind of healing to other people. That was when I first started to think about writing a book on the subject. And then a number of things happened in quick succession that launched me on that path. I started having spiritual experiences of my own for the first time in my life. One in particular that was quite profound, an experience of unconditional love or divine love for every person I saw. And that combined with the session with the medium and some other spiritual experiences that took place, that got me to decide, okay, I will leave the corporate world and write a book on this subject. And 3 years later, Your Soul's Plan came out, and then a few years after that, Your Soul's Gift. That, in a nutshell, is how this got started.
Awesome. Great. And I love the way you tell that story. I love the fact that, you know, you are this rational-based MBA-type guy who makes this radical shift in their life and in their career. I think that's terrific. I think it fits really nicely with the way we've tried to approach the spiritual questions from a scientific perspective on this show too. So I think that's awesome. Can you maybe tell folks just a little bit about, since you are this serious, rational kind of guy, how you went about training? I mean, hypnotherapy is something someone can spend a lot of time and a lot of educational credits towards, you know, exploring. You have some initials after your name. I assume they're past life, between life kind of certification. How did you go about that aspect of this?
Well, in order to answer that question, I first need to explain how I researched my two books, Your Soul's Plan and Your Soul's Gift. What happened after the session with the medium and when I started to have spiritual experiences of my own, you know, coming as I did from this very rational, left brain analytic background, my first thought when I was going to research a book about how we plan our lives before we're born is that there have to be people somewhere in the world who remember planning their lifetime. I'll find them. Well, this was back around the time when the internet had first come out. So I thought, here's the tool I need to find those people. And I went to every spirituality bulletin board I could find. I posted a message saying, author, writing a book about how we plan our lives before we're born. If you remember planning your current lifetime, please contact me. And I started to get thousands of emails from people all over the world, not a single one of whom remembered planning their current lifetime. They were writing to me with stories about past lives on Earth, past lives on other planets, lifetimes as animals, non-physical lifetimes. Fascinating stories, but not at all what I was looking for. This went on for a period of months. Finally, I began to despair of ever being able to write a book on this subject. And it was that point I said a prayer. And I said, dear God, if you want me to write a book about how we plan our lives before we're born, I will do it. But I need a little help here. And wouldn't you know it, within a very short time of making that prayer, I came into contact with several very gifted mediums and channels who, in one way or another, could find out what somebody planned before they were born. And so this was the methodology I used to research Your Soul's Plan and Your Soul's Gift. I would interview somebody about a common life challenge. And it's all the most common things we face here, because I wanted the books to help as many people as possible. So we'd talk about the pre-birth planning of physical illness, mental illness, blindness, deafness, drug addiction, alcoholism, accidents, the death of a loved one, any common challenge you can think of. And then the people I interviewed had one, two, or sometimes three sessions with the mediums and channels in which we asked Spirit, did this person plan this experience before he or she was born? And if so, why? And then in the books, I present all the information that came through. So the intention is to give meaning to suffering that might otherwise appear not to have any meaning. Now, Your Soul's Plan came out in early 2007. And as soon as it hit the market, I started to get emails from people all around the world who said, I want you to tell me what my life plan is. And for 5 years, I responded to each one of those emails in exactly the same way. I said, I'm not a medium. I'm not a channel. I don't know what your life plan is. If you want to know that, work with one of the mediums in the book. But then I learned about the field of life between lives regression, and I took the training to be able to offer that. You mentioned in the intro that I do past life regression. That's true, but it's actually a very small part of my practice as a hypnotist. 99%+ of the people who are coming to me want to know what their life plan is. And we can answer that question in a between lives regression or a life between lives regression. It's the same thing. What happens briefly in that kind of session, we go through some preliminary steps that are intended to relax the client. Then I guide them into a past life. It's almost always one that had a big impact on the plan for the current lifetime. At the end of the past life, their consciousness leaves the body in the death scene and crosses back over to the other side. They go home, so to speak, which I know might sound a little bit ominous, but there's actually nothing to it. It's very easy, safe, natural, and gentle. And everyone listening to this interview has probably done it hundreds of times already. When they get back to the other side, most people are greeted by a spirit guide. They talk with the guide briefly about why they were shown that particular past life and how it affected the plan for the current lifetime. And then we ask the person's guide to escort them to what is called the Council of Elders. The council consists of the very wise, loving, and highly evolved beings who oversee reincarnation on Earth. And they know everything about the client, the plan for the current lifetime, and everything that happened in every past life they've already had. So if someone gets in front of the Council of Elders, that is potentially a life-changing experience because the council can answer literally any question they put to them. And so this is now about a third of my life, about a third of my time is spent doing between lives regressions. It allows me to facilitate a process in which people have a direct experience that answers their questions about their life plan. They don't have to rely on a medium to be accurate. They talk to spirit directly and get the information themselves.
Yeah, I mean, this is where it gets challenging, I guess, on a number of fronts. Because, and that's why I was, guess I was approaching it from a training standpoint. I mean, the way you present some of this stuff, Rob, is awesome. We've heard a lot of this stuff before. It's, you say it in a very confident, assured way, which I take it is from your experience, your direct experience and through yourself and also in working with your clients. I haven't just seen it that way. One, I'd first say that I've experimented with past life regressions. Years ago, I did one with Bruce, a guy I met online, Bruce Goldberg. Very, very poorly done. Very unprofessional, in my opinion, even though he has quite a reputation. It's completely unsuccessful. Did another one with someone else I met through Skeptico. The guy was very earnest, spent hours with me, but there was no results of it. And this is from someone just speaking for myself. I've investigated after-death communication thoroughly. You know, as I pointed out, some of the links that we've done in this show, I've interviewed Dr. Julie Beischel, who I think is research this scientifically more than anyone else. And I'm very impressed by her research. And we conducted similar type of experiments, demonstrations on this show with skeptics, that is people who are not willing to accept the reality of this from any way. If you prove it to them scientifically or otherwise, they just, it's outside of their worldview. But so I guess what I'm kind of leading up to there is my experience is that it isn't quite as clean cut and certain and, you know, matter of fact as the way you've kind of laid it out there. Do you get what I'm, where I'm coming from? Because I'm not coming from a purely skeptical, I don't believe you standpoint. I'm coming from a let's compare and contrast all the different experiences that folks are having and that mediums are reporting, and let's kind of see where some of this stuff starts to shake out. Do you get what I mean?
I do completely understand what you're saying. The first thing I want to say in response is that my work is an offering, not an attempt at persuasion. It does not matter to me at all whether or not someone believes in pre-birth planning or between lives regressions. I care that people are happy, that they lead fulfilling lives. How they do that, what their belief system is, does not matter to me. I'm offering this to people in the spirit of helpfulness, but it's up to them whether or not they want to accept the offering. Also, I want to say, you know, some people do have more difficulty going into the trance state than others. Those tend to be people who are very analytic, either by nature and or training. The other category of people who have trouble getting into trance are people who have difficulty relaxing for one reason or another. Relaxation is really the key to the whole experience. Generally, the reason someone has trouble relaxing is that they have a very, very pressing issue in their life that they really, really want to gain insight into or healing or find just some way of coping with it. And so that attachment to outcome, so to speak, can cause the person to make even very subtle efforts to go into trance, which is exactly what you don't want to do. Going into trance is a process that you allow to happen. It's not a process that you make happen. It's kind of like going to a movie. You know, all you have to do is pay your admission fee, pick up your bucket of popcorn, and then sit down in the seat and allow the movie to display in front of you. It's very much like that, but you can't make it happen. Now, if you were to observe some of the sessions that I do, I wonder what your reaction would be, because the people who are having the experience, not all of them, but many of them, there is absolutely no doubt in their mind that they had the between lives experience, that they talked to the Council of Elders. They talk consistently about the complete non-judgment and unconditional love they felt coming from the Council. They talk consistently about having a sense that the Council knew everything about them and yet had absolutely no judgment of them. And for many of them, it's a multi-sensory experience. They're actually there. And so it's profoundly emotional. They're also being given information that they otherwise would not have access to. And then sometime down the road, in many cases, the information they've been given turns out to be correct. So they end up getting some kind of independent verification of what the Council told them. Again, I don't want to try to persuade you that it's a real phenomenon, but when I see people having this experience again and again and again, there's no doubt in my mind that it's actually happening.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead and persuade me. I want to be persuaded. You know what I mean? I want to be persuaded. I want to persuade other people. That's why I do this. You know, the tagline of Skeptico is inquiry to perpetuate doubt. And I didn't find that. I didn't start with that tagline. That tagline found me, because that's what these ancient Greek philosophers that invented the idea of Skepticos, that's what they were about. And then I got into it and I go, wow, what a wonderful spiritual journey, because doubt is an awesome spiritual journey as opposed to certainty and certitude that, you know, oh, I have all the answers. And I'm not saying that that's what you're saying. Let's be clear. I'm just trying to hash some of these things out because, you know, when I started like on this journey, and my journey's gone a lot of different ways, it's mainly been about science and following the scientific method as this kind of grounding and as this toolbox with which to look at all the stuff that science has deemed as forbidden or outside the realm of science. And it really isn't. So like, as I mentioned, after-death communication would be one example of that. Near-death experience would be another, where there's now, you know, over 200 peer-reviewed published papers that clearly strongly suggest that consciousness survives death. So that is using the scientific method and scientific principles to establish something as well as we can that goes beyond science. But back to, I guess, my story, and not that it's about my story, but that's all we can share. When I first got into this, I said, okay, I'm going to go do the mediumship work, and I'm going to follow some of the protocols that some of these scientists are following because they seem to make sense to me in terms of sharing limited amounts of information, kind of being this proxy who sits in the middle, because the most important thing for me would be verification of the reality of the communication channel. So I decided upfront that I will kind of limit that channel. I'm not going to give a lot of information beforehand, even though that might reduce the amount of information I get back, because it will increase my ability to measure, well, wow, I didn't give that person anything and I got a lot back. So I started with the first medium who was recommended to me by the Winbridge Institute, who does more certification, high quality certification of these mediums than anyone I've ever seen. Dr. Julie Beischel is PhD pharmacology. So has been trained to test all sorts of things to the highest, you know, triple blind standard. And she's done that with the mediums. So the mediums that she's certified, I have a strong degree of confidence in. That doesn't mean that people can't find other ones or that you in your work haven't found some terrific mediums. I'm sure you have. I'm just going through my process. And it was the first one I started with. It was rather expensive as mediums go. And we did this session, and this is several years ago, and it was a complete disaster. I mean, there was nothing, no hits. But the significant thing for me was at the end, she goes, you know, this rarely happens. I need to return all your money. And so that immediately kind of dispelled this thing that you'll always hear skeptics say, that these people are scam artists or all the rest of that. Here, someone had spent, you know, an hour and a half with me and said, hey, it isn't working. Here's your money back. To kind of shorten up this story, I found someone else, again, highly respected. Almost the same thing happened. And again, the guy was super nice. He goes, man, I got to give your money back. This rarely happens. The third medium I talked to, though, it was a completely different situation. I didn't change my protocol on my end. Kind of going against what you said, I didn't have any different mindset. I didn't do a different prayer or mantra or anything like that, or relieve myself of any, you know, predisposed ideas I had. The third medium was an incredible connection. I had a deep connection with my father and said some things that I thought were impossible for someone to know without having some true connection to the other side. So I guess I would kind of use that to kind of call into question that, I mean, why does it depend on me? And if there's a reality to this and certain people can access that reality and bring back information, why turn it around and say, well, some people are closed to it or some people can't go into a trance state? How, in your understanding of it, should that matter? Why would that matter?
You know, I'll share a personal story with you that answers that question. My father died about 8 years ago. And after he died, I went to a medium who I thought highly of, and she was able to contact him. It was as though he were in the room, and I was talking to him directly. I took 9 pages of notes on the conversation. And then when the session was over, I went to my sister's home and I read the notes word for word to my sister and my brother-in-law. And they said, that's him. That's your father. Then a couple weeks later, they went to see the same medium in the hope of talking to him. But they don't believe in mediumship. They couldn't explain my experience, but in general, they just don't believe in it. And the medium was not able to contact my father. The session was a complete disaster. And they asked me afterwards, you know, how did this work for you and not work for us? And I said, well, I can't be sure, but I think on some level, the medium probably picked up on your skepticism, and that probably rattled her a little bit, made her a little bit nervous. In other words, lowered her vibration. And in order to contact someone on the other side, she has to raise her vibration. The person who's in spirit lowers theirs, and they meet somewhere in the middle. So I think that's probably what happened. Does that answer your question?
No, it really doesn't, because as I explained, I mean, you know, where there is some benefit, I believe, in taking a scientific approach to this. And that's why I keep referencing, you know, Julie Bischel and the University of Arizona is where she started, and then she did this work. There's none of that in any of the research they do. They don't talk about vibratorial differences and stuff like that. They just do it over and over and over again. And they do this lab work with mediums and they measure whether or not they can achieve a certain result. I like that. Do you find any, do you have any attraction to the scientific approach to some of this spiritual work? I mean, does that, do you understand the need that some people have of trying to resolve some of these, well, why does it happen this way? Why does it happen that way kind of thing?
I do. And that's why I'm all in favor of those people who are taking the scientific approach. And I wish them great success with their work, because we do live in a very rational society, especially in the West. And there's a great need for a bridge between intellect and spirit. My own work, though, is not in that area. I understand my mission, which I believe is a pre-birth mission, is to bring an understanding of pre-birth planning to as many people as possible. The focus is on healing, spiritual growth, and so forth. It's not on proving anything scientifically. I've never attempted to do that, and I don't think that it's my purpose here. But I want to share a story with you that I think you may find very interesting. A number of years ago, I led a group past life regression at a conference, and two of the participants in this workshop were sisters. The sisters had a similar experience during the regression, which was they saw images of a particular past life in their mind's eye. but it didn't feel quote unquote real to either one of them. And so by the time the workshop was over, they had both concluded on their own that they had simply made up the whole experience. But then they went out to dinner together and shared their experiences with each other. And what they discovered to their amazement was that they had both gone back to exactly the same past life in which they'd been in a family together. Now, one was the mother and one was the daughter, so they saw it from different viewpoints. But everything they saw was the same. They saw the same people, the same clothing, the same home, the same furnishings, the same grounds around the home. Everything was identical. So that gave them independent confirmation that it had really come from spirit. Not only that, a few weeks later, they managed to trace their family tree back about five generations to a particular estate in England. And then one of the sisters went there. And then she wrote to me and she said, "Rob, the grounds around this estate are exactly what I saw in the workshop." So then they had a second independent confirmation that it had really come from spirit. And just last month, I was doing a workshop in Spain, and the same thing happened again. There were two women who are friends who attended the workshop together. And in the past life portion of the between lives regression, they both went back to the same past life in which they were male, they were Vikings, and they saw the same Viking lifetime in their mind's eye. So this kind of thing has now happened twice.
And I think that's pretty amazing. And I've heard similar kind of accounts in the research that we've done on the show. But here's the problem. I've also heard differences than that. I sent you some of the links that I did. One is Dr. Julia Sante, very gifted medium, PhD, trained, has done thousands and thousands of readings. She's coming back and saying, well, our understanding of these past lives isn't what we think they are. They're the timeline idea that we have, this linear past life thing, isn't what's really going on. We're living simultaneous lives. Interviewed another medium. I sent you the link on the show. August Goforth, a medium. I can't speak to how good he is, but you know, a lot of people love his readings. No, very skeptical of reincarnation. All the work he's done on the other side makes him very skeptical that that reincarnation happens at all. You'll talk to other, you know, spiritually ascended kind of people, gurus or mystics, and they'll tell you reincarnation works this way or that way. Or you'll talk to shaman and they'll say, you know, you don't even want to go there. Don't even contact your past spirits. I just spoke with a woman who studied this shamanistic culture in Siberia, who are the original shamans. And they say, no, you would never want to contact your in this case, your ancestors, which isn't really your past life thing. But it's like there is a lot of different information out there. And I can, on one hand, understand that you say, well, that's not what I've seen. That's not what I've encountered. But therein lies the problem. I mean, if we're kind of trying to navigate this landscape, this topography, if we're trying to map it out and understand personally how we traverse it, then we do have to, you know, as that kind of take to your rational, logical side, we do have to kind of sort through this information the best we can. So what do we do with the differences, the fundamental differences we sometimes get back about what these extended consciousness realms are?
Well, I think what you do depends upon what your intention is. If you are a researcher whose intention is to discover absolute truth, so to speak, then you continue with the scientific approach and you try to resolve these apparent discrepancies. If you're someone like me, whose intention is to offer a healing perspective or a perspective that gives people the deeper spiritual meaning and purpose of their biggest challenges, then you simply present the information that comes through with spirit. I'm aware of all the various viewpoints that you just mentioned. They've all come up at one point or another in the research I did for my books. But again, that has not been my focus. I'm not trying to resolve those discrepancies. I'm focused on the person whose child has a severe illness or who has just lost their spouse in a tragic accident. And they're asking, how could this happen? What does it mean? How do I heal from this? Those are the questions that I'm focused on.
Fair enough. So let's move off of that whole category, because I think there's merit in what you're saying. And I do appreciate that you've at least examined that to the extent that you're open to it and know that it's out there, even if that's not what you're pursuing right now. So let me kind of approach this whole thing from a slightly different perspective. From your work, from your understanding, how do you understand the differences in these realms? And I'll give you a specific example. Let's take that near-death experience body of work that we get back and the reports of that. How do you understand the near-death experience in terms of these extended realms? What's going on there?
Well, let me answer by drawing upon a different subject than NDEs, because I think this will get at one possible answer to your question. You'll remember that a number of years ago, there was a natural disaster in Southeast Asia. There was a typhoon, a monsoon, that killed about 100,000 people. I've asked about that event in the research I've done for Your Soul's Plan and Your Soul's Gift. And what I was told in the channeling sessions is that those 100,000 or so souls, before they were born, they looked at the Earth and they said, basically, we would like the Earth as a planet, as a whole, to be at a certain frequency or vibration by a certain point in linear time. And if it looks as though the Earth is not going to get there, we agree to give our lives in a large-scale natural disaster, because we know that the result of that disaster will be a worldwide outpouring of love and support and aid and compassion. It will elevate the frequency of the entire planet. And you might remember that's exactly what happened. You had all the governments of the world temporarily put aside their differences to funnel aid into Southeast Asia. Now, why am I talking about this? Well, if you look at that natural disaster strictly from a human standpoint, it's obviously a terrible tragedy. 100,000 people were killed. But if you look at it from the perspective of, say, a spirit guide, it's actually a great blessing, because, again, that outpouring of aid and unconditional love raised the frequency of the whole planet. So, you know, there's an old saying that where you stand depends upon where you sit. So if where you sit, so to speak, is in the third dimension as a human being, where you stand on the tsunami is that it was a terrible tragedy. But if where you sit is in a higher dimension as a spirit guide, then where you stand on the tsunami is that it was a great blessing to the world. There you have two diametrically opposed viewpoints, and yet both are correct from the vantage point of the observer. This, I think, is why we have a lot of these discrepancies that are very difficult to answer when we research phenomena like NDEs or reincarnation, because you have diametrically opposed viewpoints depending upon which dimension you're in. And yet, even though they're diametrically opposed, they're still correct from the vantage point of the observer.
Yeah, that's troubling. I just don't see how that gets us anywhere. I mean, you can go look today at the effects of the tsunami that are still there, that have devastated some of these countries, these islands, and will for the foreseeable future, because the aid was siphoned off and went to the wrong people or wasn't enough, or that, you know, people forget after the 2 or 3 week aid drive. So, you know, the misery that's been perpetuated on for generations and generations of that, well, we can just explain that away as, you know, someone signed up for that and, well, that's all okay. I mean, it's never ending, and you can kind of take it and pull it apart in any way you want. Or you could look at the failure of the systems that we have in place to warn people about tsunamis and how that system failed, and maybe that's been improved, and maybe that was the purpose of it. I mean, I think for a lot of people, including myself, that's just an unsatisfying answer, and the only thing that kind of halfway legitimizes it is this answer that, oh, it came from spirit, or it was somehow channeled, and I'm not sure that holds up to scrutiny. I mean, again, because there's contradictions and there's trickster elements to it. And can we really, here's a question, I guess, when that side, that rant, can we really trust what spirits tell us all the time, given that we have some indication that sometimes spirits are deceiving people?
Well, the answer to that question is you have to be discerning. It's a well-known phenomenon that there are lower vibrational beings in the lower astral realms who will sometimes misrepresent themselves as ascended or enlightened beings. And they are tricksters, as you said. Their intention is not noble. It's to wreak havoc with unsuspecting people who believe their misrepresentations. So in the research that I did for my two books, I had a number of personal sessions with every medium and channel before I chose those I wanted to work with. And the ones I chose were those who could bring forward information consistently that I knew to be accurate about my own life. And again, I had not told them anything before we did these sessions. They obtained this information on their own. So I felt very comfortable that those people were the best of the best. There were a number of others who I did these trial sessions with, and I thought, no, this, you know, there's really nothing here that makes me want to work with this person. But the ones that I eventually chose, I believe to be very, very good. They knew many things about me that they could have no other way of knowing unless spirit were really communicating with them.
You know, just recently I interviewed a gentleman, Oxford philosopher and very accomplished in the publishing world, has edited and helped publish, oh, just many, many best-selling important books. His name is Mark Booth, and his own book, The Secret History of the World, was an international bestseller. He's really educated himself in a lot of this esoteric secret knowledge and claims to know a lot through people who have direct communication with these ascended masters. And he comes back with a very Christian version of things. I also had a similar experience with an out-of-body traveler medium that I worked through a demonstration experiment on this show, Marilyn Hughes. And I have to tell you, Rob, she was extremely effective in the test that we did. There was this woman who had lost her daughter to suicide as a teenager. And Marilyn's method is, as she claims it, I mean, she prays to God and to Jesus before she goes to bed. And during her sleep, she out-of-body travels to these other realms. She was able to find this young woman in this kind of rather dark realm, in this confused realm. She's able to get some very significant information, confirming information. And I was the proxy sitter, so I was giving her no information, but I was funneling the information back to her mother. And her mother was like, oh my gosh, how could she know this? This is right on. The whole process was extremely healing to, hopefully, to both sides. I don't know about the woman who was deceased, but certainly healing for the mother and the family. But a strong Christian overlay on this thing, a strong a set of beliefs and assumptions about how the world works that is, again, different from some other folks. So what are we to make of the religious aspect that some people associate with this kind of work? And should that at all be a guide or a caution to doing this work?
Well, I don't know what the particular religious beliefs are of the two individuals you just mentioned, but my understanding in general is that belief is a very powerful creative force. There are subatomic particles that in some circles are referred to as trilliums, and it's believed that they rearrange themselves according to a person's belief system. In other words, matter is rearranging itself according to a person's belief system. The implication of that is that everyone is going to have the experience of being right. Their beliefs are going to draw to them evidence that seems to confirm on the surface that their beliefs are correct. So this is a very powerful phenomenon, as I understand it. And it's something that I think all of us need to be aware of, especially those of us who are doing research in any particular field.
Okay, so I was kind of waiting because I thought you were going to add something to that. Well, wouldn't that equally apply to your work and life planning and between lives and all that? I mean, right?
It does. It absolutely does. But again, since I'm not endeavoring to prove anything scientifically, it's again, the focus is on healing, understanding, spiritual growth, and so forth. I'm aware of this phenomenon. I know that it's very strong. But since I'm not attempting to persuade anyone of anything or prove anything in a scientific way, I think it's sufficient for me simply to be aware of it. But those who are in the scientific realm, who are trying to prove something in a scientific way, there it has much more profound implications. I'm not sure exactly what a scientific researcher could or should do about it, other than to be aware of it and how strong it is, though.
I would completely agree, and I think it's a really important point, and I'm glad you made it, and I respect how you're wrestling with it, if I understand you correctly, because, well, let me see if I got that. But what you said is, yeah, there may be this, I think the Buddhists call it like the tulpa kind of thought form thing, where we are creating our reality all the time as we go, and everything is a kind of creation, and that therefore, if we want to see past lives, we can see past lives. If we want to see between lives, we can see between lives, and we'll never know, at the very least, we'll never know the quote unquote reality of that. But at another reality, whatever is being created is for our betterment in terms of our soul's kind of path, evolution, journey. Am I kind of on the right track, or am I just word salading this whole thing?
No, I think that is very much on the right track. And this is something that I talk about in the lectures and the workshops I do. The third dimension, the world that we live in, is set up to mirror you back to you. That is a fundamental function of life in the third dimension. The world is organized to mirror you back to you so that you can discover what lies within your consciousness, even if it's at the subconscious level. And if there's something there that's in need of healing, you can then bring it to the light of conscious awareness, or you can then set about healing it. The way this shows up in my work is that just about everybody has had at least one past life, and usually multiple past lives in my belief system, in which certain things happened that caused them to pick up a false belief or a false feeling about themselves. By false, I mean false from the perspective of their soul. Two of the most common false beliefs are, one, that one is powerless, and two, that one is unworthy or perhaps even worthless. If you feel or believe yourself to be powerless or unworthy or worthless, what will happen is you will magnetize or draw to yourself experiences that seem on the surface to confirm to you that you are in fact powerless or unworthy or worthless. This is not done in a punitive way. It's not done to be harsh, even though it might sound that way. The reason it happens again is that the world mirrors you back to you, so that if you have one of these false beliefs or feelings about yourself, you can then bring it to the light of conscious awareness, where you can then set about healing it. That's what I think is happening with that.
Interesting. You know, I really appreciate your openness and your willingness to kind of handle these questions that a lot of people just kind of shut down, or they kind of draw into their shell, or, you know, just show that they're not open to the kind of exploration that I think is at the core of this work anyway. I mean, if we are discovering our spiritual journey, then I don't understand why people aren't open to looking at all different aspects of the problem. So I really commend you for that. Let me kind of, as we wrap this up, let me come at one other issue that is just kind of a curiosity. It's more of a curiosity issue. I think there's something here that I'm trying to drill into, but I'm just asking you from your experience, from your work, from the stuff you've seen and done, do you think there's a technological or biological aspect to spirit communication? Are we going to see it on our iPhone? Do we see it in consciousness from other planets who are more advanced? Do we see it in ET? You know, I mean, is there a technological, biological aspect to this stuff?
I believe that there's definitely a biological aspect. This is a little bit beyond my area of expertise, but for example, the pineal gland is very important in terms of connection with spirit. The chakra system, which is well known and quite an ancient system of understanding, I think is very important. There are, as I understand it, several etheric bodies surrounding the physical body. So from the physical body moving outward, the next layer is the emotional body, then the mental body, and then the spiritual body. And there are bodies of channeled literature that explain what happens to those different bodies after you die, and as you move up through the dimensions, you shed them until eventually you have only the spiritual body left. In terms of technology, I think the really interesting question there is what will be the connection years down the road between AI and spirit? Because spirit, as I understand it, loves to move into form, form meaning the physical realm. Right now, spirit has moved into physical human bodies and also plant and animal and insect bodies. But it won't be long until we have various forms of artificial intelligence. And what will happen then? Is spirit going to move into a robot? I don't know the answer to that question, but it will be fascinating to find out.
It will. And, you know, even closer to the horizon, what is going to happen when we transplant a human head, as that guy, and I forget his name, that guy in Italy, that neurosurgeon is planning to do either this year or next year? You know, what's going to happen there in terms of the connection between our physical body, our physical brain, and consciousness?
These are fascinating questions. And, you know, it's a whole new world out there. We're going to be moving into all these new areas like the one you just mentioned, like artificial intelligence. And I'm not sure what the intersection between spirit and those things is going to look like, but we're going to see some of it in our lifetime. And I think it's going to be fascinating to see what develops.
And what about ET? You know, I just interviewed a very gifted medium named Marissa Ryan. You know, 90% of her work is with after-death communication for the grieving. Again, another Winbridge Institute certified medium, highly skilled. But I wanted to talk to her because in one of her presentations, she's just like a super open person. She just does these readings publicly sometimes and says whatever comes up. She goes, the guy asks about ET. And she goes, well, I think you're being followed. I think you're being tracked. And there definitely is intelligent spirit from other planets that do choose to interact at times down here, and people can be reincarnated on different planets in different lives. Do you have any knowledge, experience with the ET question?
Only minimal. Earlier this year, I was in Australia to speak at a spirituality conference that was running side by side with an ET conference. And during one of the breaks, I was standing outside close to the beach with a group of people who were attending the ET conference. And for the first time in my life, I saw what I considered to be an unidentified flying object, or actually objects in the sky. They were points of light, but they were moving so fast and at 90 degree angles. They would go in one direction and then suddenly shift at the same speed to move 90 degrees in another direction. I had never seen anything like that in my life before. All the people at the ET conference were saying that this was a demonstration that ETs were giving to them as a way of confirming their belief in extraterrestrials. Who knows what the intention was on the part of whoever was doing this, but it sure looked like unidentified flying objects to me.
Rob, what are some of the most common reasons that people seek your help? They hear an interview like this. What is it that sparks them to say, okay, I have to do this. I have to get a session with Rob. I have to figure out more.
The people who come to me for between lives regression usually fall into one of two categories. The first category is the general spiritual explorer. This is someone who is on a conscious spiritual path. They want very much to learn and grow as much as they can over this lifetime to make the best possible use of whatever their time they're on planet Earth. And so they want to talk to the Council of Elders in a between lives regression to ask, what did I plan for this lifetime? What is my purpose? How am I doing in fulfilling my plan? How can I do better? The second group of people are those I referred to earlier who have had something difficult happen. They've had some kind of major challenge or tragedy. They're trying to heal from it. They're also trying to understand it. They want to ask the council, did I plan this before I was born? If I did, why in the world did I do that? And how can I respond to this challenge now in a way that brings healing and light to myself and the other people in my life? And those are the kinds of questions that the Council of Elders loves to answer.
Great. So how do people find out more? Obviously, your books are probably a starting point, but also through your website, right?
The website is yoursoulsplan.com. Again, if you go to the books pages in the main menu, you can read parts of the books for free. If you click on store and then on spiritual guidance, you'll see all the different types of sessions I offer. And then if you click on those, you can read about each individual session type.
Awesome. Well, it's been just great having you on. Again, our guest has been Robert Schwartz. Please check out his books and his excellent website at yoursoulsplan.com. Rob, thanks again for joining me.
It's been my pleasure.
Thanks again to Rob Schwartz for joining me today on Skeptico. The question I tee up from this interview is, do you believe we plan our lives between lives? Yes, no, maybe, sometimes. Wait, take maybe out of there. I hate maybe. Yes, no, sometimes, always. There's a ton to pull apart here, and there's many more questions to ask that I didn't ask. So straighten me out. Tell me where I'm wrong. Point me to other people that have investigated this and have come to better conclusions. By the way, I feel I can reach out and directly ask you to do that, because since I put the call out a couple of episodes ago, so many of you have reached out to connect with me, share your thoughts, share your comments, share your projects. It's so gratifying, and I don't want you to stop. Tell me what you think. Tell me how you connect to this information, so we, you and I, can better understand why and how this magical thing has happened. I'm sitting here alone in my office talking into this mic, and somehow you've found it on the other end and it's connected with you. You know, I recently had a Skeptico listener ping me and say, hey, you know, I don't live by you, but I'm going to be in your area. I'm visiting. Is there any way we could get together for coffee? We wound up taking a walk on the beach near where I live. And the first thing he said was, there's no one I can talk to about this stuff. And I said, yeah, I get it. There's no one I can talk to about this stuff. That's why I started Skeptico. That's my real story. So if you want to connect, connect. Skeptico website, Skeptico forum, Facebook, email, connect. Hey, that's going to do it for this episode. Have some good ones coming up. Please stay with me for all of that. And until next time, take care. Bye for now.